People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note here on Fine Music Radio. And a couple of weeks ago, we were talking to Nicholas Ellenbogen and Liz Shimshak about the play The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, which has just opened at the renovated Theatre on the Bay, Peter Turin's Theatre on the Bay. The show is being directed by Paul Warwick Griffin, who has had an international career spanning some 20 years now, and a list of credits in just about every aspect of the theatrical arena, from actor to director and to producer. We have him as a director here in the studio today. He's directed hugely successful South African and New Zealand tours of Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, Jesus Christ Superstar, as well as Stepping Out the musical and Hair the Love Rock musical. His production of Jesus Christ Superstar, for example, has toured to Greece and South Korea. And for over 4 years, Paul was associate director for the world tour of Andrew Lloyd Webber's Cats, traveling with the production to places like Beirut, Kuala Lumpur, Seoul, Doha, Taipei, and so on. So, Paul, it's good to have you here in Cape Town, which I gather is, in fact, where you were born. Welcome.
It is. Thank you, Ronnie. It is. It's good to be home. Yes, I was born and raised in Cape Town, left for a period of time, and I completed my schooling in the UK, but then came back, and I was a student at UCT, and then I've been living back in the UK for about 15 years now.
Okay. And when you do say it's good to be back home, does it feel like home, or do you get to a point where it's a bit nostalgic more than anything else?
No, I think it'll always be like home, and I still have family here. My mom is still here, and my brother is still living here. So, and I have very strong connections with the industry here, and I do try and get back on a regular basis to work on a level, more often than not directing something, often for Peter. But yes, it very much feels like home, and I hope it always will.
It's interesting that you speak about London as being home, because you also travel such a lot, as we've just discovered here. Mm. And you made a little comment before we came to the studio that you're hardly there, sadly.
Yes.
So that must...
It is. It's not without its challenges. I mean, I think my reality is that I work across a number of countries and territories, and specifically, I'm more recently been doing quite a lot of work in the Asian Pacific territories, to include Australia and China, and so I do spend quite large chunks of time away from home, and this year has been particularly challenging from a timing point of view. So I think we can count time at home in weeks as opposed to months this year. But you know, these are good problems to have, I suspect.
Yes, better than not working and sitting at
Indeed.
Home in London in
Indeed.
A little flat with Neil and I-ish.
Very much so, yes.
So I would like, before we start talking about the play and other things in your life, you're a partner in GWB Entertainment. What is that?
Well, about 16, 17 years ago, I was fortunate enough to be part of the original South African company of Cats when I was still performing. Those were sort of my death throes as a performer, as it were. And that tour it was the South African season, and that just got picked up for a very brief season, a rather magnificent season, in Beirut at a festival there called the Betadine Festival, which is, you know, an incredible festival that had been managed to be kept alive by some very passionate women that were programming this festival. And right the way through some of their more turbulent war years, they managed to keep this festival going as an arts festival. Anyway, we did Cats there, and it was the first time that the show had ever been done outdoors, which is in and of itself a rather interesting challenge.
I can't imagine it.
But it was a very special experience, and we were lucky to have it. But what then happened was that the suddenly other territories, and some of the more emerging markets, and specifically in the Asian Pacific territories, started to say, well, look, you know, we'd love to have a tour of Cats. And so the South African company was the company that was rehearsed and available at the time. So we were in a very fortunate position. Suddenly we were being dispatched to Taiwan or Korea or China to facilitate these seasons. And in doing so, my business partner Gareth and I met somebody who at the time was the executive producer for Andrew Lloyd Webber's production entity, which is the Really Useful Group, and Torben Brookman was the associate producer for the show based out of Sydney. So we became very friendly and recognized quickly that there were these incredible territories which were opening up as emerging markets who required required content. And not only required content, but they required just a slightly different approach in terms of how one does business and how you deliver, because they were not established markets, and they didn't have the kind of infrastructure that the UK or even South Africa has. So it required a little bit of a specialist eye, I guess. And so I think we recognized quickly that there was a gap in the market. So we started to facilitate a few things, largely informally in the early days, and that has snowballed to a point when, you know, we are now fortunate enough to have quite a successful business in that regard, and we have an office in London, we have an office in Australia, and you know, the volume of projects has grown, and I guess in some ways we've been forced to grow up, which is always unfortunate, and we now have multiple projects going at any given point.
What does GWB stand for?
That's Griffin, Williams, Brookman. So those are it's actually four people involved, because the Brookman part are a husband and wife part. Partnership, Torben and Rochelle Brookman. So there are four of us. That.
So a show like this that you're directing for Peter Turin, The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, would that fall under the auspices of GWB?
No, not at all. So every now and again I get let off my leash, and I get I get allowed to go back to the thing that I suppose I really love doing the most, which is, you know, working in a rehearsal room with actors, and in this case, you know, of Curious Incident, I'm fortunate enough to have a remarkable company of actors. So it's a really inspiring and enriching process for me, and something I try and do as often as I can. It's not always easy to carve out, you know, the sufficient block of time to do it, because directing a project, and certainly a project of this nature, is time consuming and is all consuming. So it's very difficult and wrong to have a split focus. So it's often challenging to find the time. But when I do get the time, it's something that I really dearly love to do. Yes. And again, as I said, in this instance, you know, I couldn't have been more fortunate with a remarkable company of actors. Truly, on a daily basis, they make my day a better day. Yes, worthwhile.
What a nice thing to say from the director. I hope the cast is listening. Paul, let's just have your first piece of music. What have you chosen for us?
Well, I think I've chosen John 1941, which is from Jesus Christ Superstar.
It's the closing, isn't it?
Right, it's the closing. It's right at the very end, and it's an instrumental piece of music. It's a show that I have a very long history with. I performed it myself when I was still performing it on numerous occasions, and I've directed it on quite a few occasions. I've directed it here in Athens, Greece, and in South Korea, and I think it's just one of the most profoundly beautiful and moving pieces of music, and certainly has a special place in my heart.
it's the rather beautiful and even mysterious and sad and melancholy closing of that extraordinary musical Jesus Christ Superstar by Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice. It's known as John 1941, and it closes the show. And it was the first choice of my guest, Paul Warwick Griffin, who's in town to direct The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Night at the recently refurbished Peter Tureen Theatre on the Bay. And Paul, I have to ask you, in all your life in London and all that, I know you work very closely with Tim Rice and to some extent with Andrew Lloyd Webber. You've mm-hmm. met them both, haven't you?
But I
think Tim is the one you've worked with mostly.
Yes, I think, Tim is somebody who actually rather mysteriously popped out during a season of Jesus Christ Superstar here that I directed. And we were in previews in Johannesburg. And I remember Charlie Hunlingenfelder, who was the musical director, who's also scoring all the original music for Curious Incident, who's quite brilliant, so quite thrilling to be able to have a chance to work with him again. Anyway, Charles and I were sitting outside during a matinee with our head in our hands trying to solve problems that had come along. And so one of the front of house folk popped out and said, "Oh, there's somebody here to see you." And I sort of looked up and rather grumpily, I think, said, "Look, I really don't want to see anyone today." And they went sort of, no. And they were slightly ashen and they said, "I think you do want to see this person." So I sort of stood up and huffed and puffed, yes. And well, who is this person? And it was Tim Rice, who had arrived rather unannounced. So that was a rather startling a jolt to my day. But in true form, he's a remarkable gentleman, isn't he? You know, obviously the lifetime of experience is unparalleled, and truly one of the most generous creative souls that I've ever had the privilege of working with. And from that point on, Tim became a real champion for many of the projects that we were doing out here. We went on to do Chess at a later point, which is a show which is very close to Tim, and he was incredibly open and generous. I spent many, many weeks with him in his home in London talking through the process, and we slightly adjusted the structure of the show, and he was just incredibly supportive of what we were doing and how we were doing it. So, and he's gone on to remain somebody, and I wouldn't quite be brave enough or bold enough to call him a friend, but he's certainly in a professional capacity. He's somebody that I would always check in with.
Sir Tim Rice.
Indeed. Yes.
But now, isn't it interesting? The real sort of, well, I don't know. I know Andrew Lloyd was hugely successful, as we know. But wasn't it amazing how, with Tim Rice, for things like Jesus Christ Superstar and Evita, it really seemed to be a relationship that gelled and fed off each other, would you agree?
Absolutely.
In those periods.
Absolutely. There was an alchemy there that was difficult, I suspect, to absolutely pinpoint. And I suspect, respectfully, it's something that's never quite been matched by the very few writing partnerships that I think could ever claim to have changed the landscape of the industry that they're working in. And certainly Tim and Andrew absolutely changed the landscape of musical theatre, you know, henceforth. I mean, we've never looked back after the brilliance of Superstar or Evita, and these are albums that were released as albums, as concept albums, and challenged the way we introduced songs to an audience and challenged the style, and, you know, the notion of a rock opera was effectively born through those projects. So,
but isn't it amazing that they are still going so strong? They pack people in, Evita, Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think they, you know, they tell a story, both of those projects. They tell a story that is universal on a level. I think, you know, the brilliance of the writing has rightly stood the test of time, and they have, it is, you know, it has shown them over their 35-40 years, it is proven their absolute brilliance, and they continue to thrill. I mean, Evita was opened two nights ago at the Sydney Opera House, so, and, you know, it was here quite recently. It's these are pieces that I think we will be watching and admiring and enjoying for many, many years to come.
And films have been made, very successful films
indeed.
But it wasn't, just to go with the Andrew Lloyd Webber, Tim Rice thing for a bit, they didn't have a fallout, did they? They just went their separate ways. It wasn't a sort of Gilbert and Sullivan thing.
No, I suspect there was, they do. Listen, I mean, the bottom line is they still maintain a strong and close personal friendship. It was Andrew's 70th birthday not so long ago, and Tim was very much there front and centre. They are supportive and remain incredibly supportive and passionate about each other's ventures. They've branched off into slightly different directions. directions. Tim, of course, famously, you know, done so much work as a lyricist for specifically for Disney over the years, and many, many films under his belt, and has worked incredibly successfully with a number of writing partnerships, as has Andrew. So I think it was just that partnership was in and of a very special time. Something magical came out of it, and I suspect, you know, they reached a point when they were more interested in slightly different projects, and it very much was about different projects that were attracting them. So, you know, I think there is a temptation to imagine that there was something dramatic in Muxus, but I suspect that wasn't quite
true. But thank you, Paul, because it's interesting. I mean, you've worked very closely, as you said, with Tim. You've met and worked with Andrew. So it's interesting to hear from the horse's mouth, so to speak, what you thought. But now that's taken us to our next piece of music, which is...
Well, the next piece of music is actually a song called With You from a musical, from Ghost, the musical. And Ghost was the first West End musical that I ever worked on.
Is that the same one as the film?
Exactly right. So it was based on the film. In fact, the book for the stage show was written by Bruce Joel Rubin, the Academy Award winning screenplay. And I was very fortunate to be part of the original team when that was tried out in Manchester, and then it transferred to London before its Broadway opening. The music was written by Dave Stewart from the Eurythmics, and Glenn Ballard, who is a record producer writer, whose string of successes includes many Michael Jackson hits, etc., etc. So two sort of industry, you know, mammoth industry figures, and it was just an extraordinary experience to be part of that. It was the first time I'd done a new musical from scratch, so it has a very special place in my heart, and it's an incredibly beautiful, I think, song, and it's I think performed on the recording by Casey Levy, who originated the role, who's just a remarkable talent. So it's a song that I think for me is a very special memory.
I picked up your shirts this morning. I don't know why. I don't know why. Mr. Reynolds said to say hello. I started to cry. I started to cry. Every place we ever walked in, everywhere we talked, I miss you. You never leave my mind. So much of you is left behind. You took my days with you. I know that I can't leave.
music from the musical Ghost, and that was called With You. And another choice of my guest on this week's edition of People of Note here on Fine Music Radio, Paul Warwick Griffin, who's in town to direct The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. Paul, I think we should start talking about this play now, because I want to find out the director's perspective. I mentioned that I'd spoken to Nicholas Ellenbogen and his wife Liz Shimshack, and from the actor's point of view, and they also spoke of just what a wonderful cast it is. It's because it's a fairly big cast, isn't it?
It is. It's a company of 10, which is, you know, I think unusually big for a play, and particularly in this day and age, the economics of 10 actors on the stage is challenging. So we're grateful to Peter for taking that risk with that. But it is a profoundly beautiful piece of writing, and I think, you know, Peter was looking for something special to mark this new chapter in the genesis of the Theatre on the Bay, and this play sort of fitted the bill very much so.
When you heard that, how did you come about being asked to direct? And when you were invited, did you say an immediate yes? Because you said earlier how you love being let off your leash a bit.
Indeed.
You didn't think, oh my goodness, not this.
Not at all. Actually, over the years, Peter and I frequently have conversations about titles that we would like to do together. And Curious Incident had been, I remember seeing Curious Incident when it opened at the National some years back. And I actually phoned Peter at interval, actually. I was standing outside the National Theatre. And I phoned him and said, we have to do this play at some point. But of course, being the just enormous success that the brilliant Marinelli National Theatre production was, the license was very much tied up for a number of years. Peter and I had been speaking about what to reopen the theatre with, and he wanted something obviously special, and eventually this title sort of circled back round to this title. So he dutifully went off and worked his magic with the National Theatre and managed to sort of claw those rights from them.
He's quite good at that.
He's fairly good at that. So it was never a question, whether I would do it or not. It was logistically always challenging to find the dates to do it, but it was something I was always desperate to do, so couldn't have been happier.
And I'm sure you're going to answer in the very positive here, but the adaptation by Simon Stevens of the novel by Mark Haddon, I've discovered a number of people have read the novel and know about it. I hadn't read it. Mm-hmm. Is the adaptation brilliant?
I think it is a brilliant adaptation. It is true that, you know, it was crafted very much in conjunction with Marion Elliott, who directed the National production, and so it's a very carefully constructed adaptation. It's very true to the book. I think that we know that many, many people know and love that novel. It really has resonated in people's lives, I think, in a way that is quite unique. You know, not many stories come along that have that level of impact. And so I think at the time of doing the adaptation, both Simon Stevens and indeed Marion were very acutely aware of how careful that they needed to be. They had to craft something that would be, find a way of delivering it theatrically in a way that would be satisfying, but for new viewers, but also resonate powerfully for people that knew and loved that book so much. And so they were very, it's a very careful, very clever, there's a device that has been installed in the stage adaptation, which effectively gives you a play within a play, which is a very clever construct.
Is it a challenge for the director?
I found it to be hugely challenging. I think it is, and indeed I think the actors would echo that. It's a very complicated story to tell, and it's funny and it's sad and it's profoundly moving in places. But it is always seen through the eyes of this incredibly special young man, of 15-year-old Christopher Boone. So it's the perspective of the storytelling and the perspective of the narrative is always seen through those eyes. And of course he has a very different perspective on life, and so it's challenging to try and ensure that we're always honouring that and always, yes, you know, finding ways of demonstrating that or conveying that to an audience that remain engaging and thrilling, because it is a thrilling ride.
Is it? He's an autistic person. Is that right, or is that simplifying it too much?
No, I don't think it's simplified. I think it is true that Christopher sits on the autism spectrum. However, Mark Haddon, who wrote the original book, was always very strong that he didn't want Christopher referred to as being somebody who was autistic in any way. And in fact, you know, true to form, it is never mentioned, not on the book, not on the play. So we understand that to be probable truth, but it's not the defining or the most interesting part of Christopher. better. So it's something that, yes, I think that would be an appropriate
description
of him, yes.
And it must therefore be, because it needs a young actor, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It must be quite tricky for that actor to actually get into this sort of rather weird no man's land type role.
Yes, I think it's actually, we're fortunate enough to have a very brilliant young actor called Kai Luke Brummer playing the role. And Kai did an awful lot of research, and he spent some time with people who were autistic. So he spent a lot of time trying to engage with those ideas and those realities. But he's a very smart, he's probably the smartest young actor I've worked with ever. And I've worked with a few, but he's, you know, he brings the kind of boundless enthusiasm and kind of unbridled passion for what he does into that room every day, and that's quite infectious. And that's, you know, so he's made what could be a very challenging process something that is a thrilling process. And the truth is, it's a remarkable role for anybody to have the opportunity to play. So, and you know, Kai is no fool; he can recognise that too. So, yeah.
Would you say it's a remarkable play for anyone to direct?
I think so. I do feel very privileged to have had the opportunity to do it. I think it's a powerful piece of theatre, you know, and in a way, as I said, it's funny, it's moving, it moves at an incredible pace, it reads like a thriller, and indeed it is a thriller, it's a murder mystery at its core. You know, who killed the dog in the night time is the sort of catalyst of the story, and the search for those answers opens a Pandora's box of answers, or questions rather, that Christopher needs to answer. But it's challenging, but at the same time probably, you know, very lucky to have the opportunity to do it.
Because Nicholas was saying it's not a comedy, but there's many funny parts. It's not sad, but you cry. And it's exhilarating, but it's thought-provoking. So everything that a night at the theatre could wish to be, by the sounds of things.
I think that's true. I think it's, you know, you look at it and you say, you know, what do you want your audience to experience, and all of those things would be true, we'll find out.
He said, not giving too much away. Yes, we'll find out from the audience reaction. But Paul, just before we take your next piece of music, we had, after the interview with Nicholas and Liz, we had a few calls from people saying, is it suitable for children? I wasn't quite sure how to answer that. So here I have an opportunity to ask the director.
I think it's an interesting question. I think it is something that is probably suitable for young adults. I'm not sure that I would urge people to bring children to the show. I think it is told through the eyes of a 15-year-old boy. It is centered around some reasonably adult themes and places. It is not, you know, a family-friendly fare, let's put it that way.
Teenagers upwards.
I think so. I think so. And I think, you know, I'd love to see sort of young minds in there of 13, 14. And I think, I think it's always such a personal perspective, isn't it? You know, what is suitable? You know, there's a tiny little bit of language every now and again. There are some rather disturbing and sequences. It's gritty, so it's certainly not something for...
the faint-hearted.
No. I think there are rather brilliant offerings elsewhere for those.
What is your next piece of music, Paul Warwick Griffin?
I think we've actually let the sunshine in from Hair.
My goodness.
And that, again,
a
blast from the past. Well, it's a blast from my past, actually. And that was the first musical that I ever did in South Africa. And I did that just across the road in the drama theatre at Artscape. And again, I've gone on to direct that show. And it has a joyful place in my heart.
Let's go! This way, soldier! Let's go! Move out! You better move, soldier!
Short of breath, walking proudly in our winter coats, wearing smells from laboratories, facing a dying nation of moving paper fantasies, listening for the new told lies.
supreme visions of lonely tears. Somewhere inside something there is a rush of greatness. Who knows what stands in front of our lives? I fashion my future on films in space. Silence tells me secretly, yeah, everything, yeah, everything.
Manchester, England, England. Manchester, England, England. Across the Atlantic Sea. And I'm a genius, genius. I believe in God. And I believe that God believes in Lord. That's me. That's me. That's me.
That's me.
Remember the musical Hair and what a huge success that was as well, Let the Sun Shine In. And it was another choice of my guest, Paul Warwick Griffin, here on People of Note this week, talking about, mostly, the curious incident of the Dog in the Nighttime opening. Well, in fact, it has opened at the Theatre on the Bay, the refurbished Theatre on the Bay, and by all accounts, an amazing production and an amazing play. Paul, I want to find out a bit more about you, just because you spoke about your family. When did the theatre bug bite you? Have you been in this world for as long as you can remember?
Pretty much. It was quite young. So I think that, you know, I was 7 when I took myself off to an audition. And my mum often tells a story that I literally did take myself off to that audition, sort of quietly unannounced. And then I was, you know, throughout through my childhood, I performed on and off. So I probably felt that it was, you know, from an early age, this was where I was going to end up. But
you studied psychology, you told me, at UCT.
Yes.
Was that to help you as a director?
Well, in truth, I felt like I'd done quite a lot of performing. I felt I was likely to end up in the theatre, and I thought I just wanted to stretch my mind a little bit in other areas. I should probably absolutely note it was an undergrad psych degree, so it wasn't, you know, I wouldn't profess to be a qualified psychologist.
Okay. So no therapy for me after this
sadly
interview.
Not, no.
What a pity. Paul, but you've also then played some iconic roles, because as you said, well, you were in Jesus Christ Superstar, and I think you played the role of Jesus, is that right?
I did. I actually played here at Artscape, we did a production where I played both Jesus and Judas, and we had a device at the top of the show during the overture, when the company would be on stage and there was a live gaming match that happened on stage, and the loser of that gaming match would play Judas and the winner would play Jesus. So you'd only ever know somewhere through the overture which role you were playing that night, and if you were playing Judas, you had seconds to prep to go into Heaven on Their Minds, which is the opening song of the show. So it was an incredibly thrilling
and amazing thing to do.
It was an amazing thing to do, and it was something I was very privileged to be part of.
And another iconic role, did you not do Frank in the Rocky Horror Show?
I did.
You said laughing.
Yes, I try and just push that one over the cupboard. I did, actually. I say that, and I don't. It's not entirely truthful. I had an awful lot of fun over the years, and I played that on and off for a number of years. I think the first, when I started with Rocky, I played Riff Raff, and then I switched at some point and started playing Frankenfurter. So, we had a lot of fun with that.
When does a person who's a successful actor, as you clearly were, make a decision to stop acting and stop getting all the applause and all that and become a director? How does that come about?
I think it was something that I've always felt drawn to do. I think actors are remarkable people and remarkable things, but I do think you should only act if you wake up in the morning and you cannot imagine anything else or any other way of getting through the day, then that's what you need to do. But I think if you can imagine another way of getting through your day, I think you should, because it requires a very special, dedicated passion. And I, for some time, had been drawn to the idea. I love the creativity of directing, and indeed in extending from that into the producing world. I find a different kind of creative release, and I find it a quieter process in terms of a thought process, but it's one that I find incredibly rewarding. It's frustrating and it is difficult, and it is a very different relationship with the end product, because of course you step away and then and it's often said, and I think rather brilliantly said once by a colleague of mine, that the task of a director is ultimately to simply not get in the way and make sure that story is told.
Rather like a conductor.
I think that's absolutely true.
Yeah, not get in the way.
And whilst you want to facilitate the best version of that story, you also need to make sure that you're not inserting yourself or your ideas between that story and an audience. So
I think could sometimes be very difficult and very tricky for an ego in the way.
I think that is true, and you know, it is your task to constantly kind of go, is this the best choice for the story in that moment in time, or am I kind of forcing a concept or forcing an idea on an actor or on a moment?
Can you remember the moment when you decided, right, that's it, and your first real director's job?
Yes, the first musical that I directed was Joseph, which was for Peter. I directed some, you know, I'd been directing, dabbling through my university career, and then my first professional directing job was Joseph for Peter. I'd also come out on the back of 4.5 years of Cats, where I had flipped between being I was in the show, and I started out as a resident director and being performing in the show, and then when that became too hard, because we were moving the show quite often through Scandinavian territories and we were playing big arenas, so we were moving every couple of days, I got to the point where I just couldn't do both particularly well. And it is probably true to say that when you reach a certain age and you're still dressed up in lycra from head to toe, you do have a moment of thinking perhaps there's a more dignified way of earning a living. No, that's facetious. It was something that I always imagined that I'd like to cross over into, and I think having done that, you know, often people say to me, don't you miss performing, or would you like to perform again? And the truth is that I don't. I feel incredibly lucky to be able to work in a business that I love and in a way that I'm incredibly rewarded for.
And as you say, with this cast, which is such a splendid cast that you're working with,
yes.
For the Curious Incident. Now, another choice of music.
Yes, this one is Seeing You, which is from a brand new musical, which is Groundhog Day, and Groundhog Day was written by...
Is that the same as the film?
It's based on the film, indeed. And we opened that in London at the Old Vic a couple of years ago, and that was the first show that took me to Broadway, so that was my first Broadway experience, and perhaps that's why it's a choice today, but I also... It's a gorgeous song about community and about acceptance, I think I'd love to share that with people.
Drove out of town, took a ride onto a northbound highway. Was it really only yesterday? If I had known what now I know, maybe I would have taken a moment. Maybe looked over my shoulder. Maybe shed a tear. Now I'm here. A storm rolled in, overwhelmed me sometime late this morning. I've spent a lifetime seeking signs, reading lines, trying to forecast the future, always staying a day ahead. Well, that was the idea.
Music from the musical Groundhog Day, based on the film that we know so well and called Seeing You, another choice of my guest, Paul Warwick Griffin, here on People of Note. Paul, we're nearing the end of the program. I think we've learned quite a lot from your point of view of the curious incident of the dog in the night, in the night time, which is on at the Theatre on the Bay, Peter Rehn's Theatre on the Bay. And if I were to ask you, maybe this is a difficult question, why would I go and see it? Tell me why I should go and see it.
It's a remarkable story being told by a remarkable collection of actors, and I think that is something that we should celebrate. At the same time, I do think it's a moving, thrilling, funny, charming, profoundly truthful night in the theatre. I think it's exactly what good theatre is.
I think there you go, from the horse's mouth once again. But before I let you go, one of the things that Peter Twin is very excited about is bringing the musical Matilda here in December, which is a huge hit, isn't it? And it's not been here before, I don't think. And you are involved, but you're not directing, are you? You're involved somehow.
Correct. So Matilda, my producing entity, GWB, is producing the new international tour of Matilda. And Matilda, that tour is starting here in South Africa, which is something that we're very proud about. And for the South African season, we are, of course, partnering with Peter. So that's it's exciting on a number of levels. There are a few firsts there. And yes, you're right, it's the first time that the show has been here. It's a show that has been playing hugely successfully for 7 years in London, enjoyed a wonderfully successful run on Broadway. It's won multiple awards and is one of the smartest and most moving pieces of work that I've ever had the joy of being anywhere around.
Oh, really? So yes. It's because I don't know it at all. It's based on a Roald Dahl book, isn't it?
It is based on a Roald Dahl book, And of course, his, you know, his genius is unparalleled. And then we're fortunate to the writing team that was around that, Dennis Kelly and the brilliant Tim Minchin, who got hold of this and shaped by Matthew Orchers, who's currently the artistic director of the Old Vic in London and again one of the shrewdest theatrical minds I've ever worked with. So, you know, this was crafted by people really at the top of their game, and it's delightful and something that I'm beyond excited and proud and thrilled to be part of.
Gosh, that's nice to hear. And obviously, because it's going to be here over Christmas and New Year, it's very much a family show, isn't it?
Very much a family show. It's one of those shows that, you know, is so suited to, you can bring your children, you could bring your grandchildren, or you could sneak off by yourself and come and enjoy it. And I think that's, you know, that's the smartness of it. It's so clever. It's, you know, lyrically, it's one of the most brilliant constructs that I've ever been around. So I think it's, and we see that worldwide, is, you know, people enjoy the show. It's date night, you know, with people in their 20s or bringing the kids. So it's a great offering, certainly for that time of year.
So that's in December, November, December, when you start working on that. But now when you leave The Curious Incident to us and the cast, because you've got to let go, as you said just now, do you go back to London? What do you do next?
I actually don't. I go up to Johannesburg, because Matilda, in fact, opens its South African tour in Johannesburg before transferring down to Cape Town. So it's across up to Johannesburg, and then as soon as we have that open, it's on a plane across to Australia, where we're producing Andrew Lloyd Webber's latest musical, which is School of Rock, which opens in Australia 3 weeks after we open Matilda. So it's a
good grief. How do you keep your head around the various things that you do?
Well, many people would argue that I don't, Rodney.
Paul, thanks for a lovely chat, and you've certainly whet our appetites significantly for The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime at the Theatre on the Bay. And I've been talking to the director, Paul Warwick Griffin. But Paul, before you go, you've chosen a song from Matilda for us to listen to.
Yes.
Just to whet our appetites even more.
Indeed, indeed.
What are we going to hear?
It's a song called Revolting Children. it's just delicious. It's sort of like a brightly striped piece of candy. It's a great example of the wit and the humour and the, not to over-egg it, but the genius of Tim Minchin and his writing. So I hope people enjoy it.
Thank you. Thanks, Paul. I've been talking to Paul Warwick Griffin. We're going to listen to Matilda now, Revolting Children. And as I say, we'll go and see The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. Paul, thank you.
Thank you.
Never again will we leave behind.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
Don't miss The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, presented by Peter Turin. From the best-selling novel comes this multi-award-winning play, directed by Paul Warwick Griffin, with an unforgettable cast including Kai Brummer, Lesoho Siabe, Ashley Dowds, Kate Normington, Nicholas Ellenbogen, Liz Simchak, Jenny Stead, Jenna Galloway, Dylan Eady, and Clayton Evertson. Embark on this extraordinary life-changing journey, making its South African debut at the new Theatre on the Bay, September 25. Book now at peterturin.co.za.
FMR.